Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Welcome in to Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. I'm Joe McCann, and Phil Bush is here as well. Phil, 1-1 week, about what we expected. I will certainly take it.
Yeah, we got exactly what we needed out of the week, and a little bonus that was Marcus Howard.
Yeah, Marcus Howard is going to be a big topic in today's podcast. We have to talk about just a historic week for the star sophomore. We're also going to talk about the past two games, going 1-1, and look ahead to the next two and what is Marquette actually on track for as we move forward in Big East play. But Phil, the lead topic just has to be Marcus Howard and how well, you know, he has played this week. A school record 52 points. Which ties a Big East record, I believe, tied his own school record for 11 threes in a game, 37 points against Villanova after that, for an average of 44.5 points per game this week. I am assuming he will be named the Big East Player of the Week on Monday. If he isn't, I would launch some sort of investigation. He leads the Big East at 28.8 points per game in league play. He's seventh in the NCAA in scoring at 23.5 points per game. By the way, his brother is fifth, interestingly enough. And he hasn't missed a free throw this year. So the question, Phil, is how great is Marcus Howard?
Really super duper great. I mean, he's just been awesome to watch this last week, and I think the rumors of his demise have been put to rest after that rough start to Big East play. He seemingly bottled up all the not great play he had and inverted it and turned it into just ridiculously awesome.
Yeah, I think we are in agreement in the last podcast that while Marcus Howard was in a slump, neither of us were overly concerned about it. We just wanted it to end.
Right.
And once we got into the second half of that Providence game, I think everyone said, oh, Howard's back. And boy, was he back with a vengeance. Just watching that game and the way he just ignited in that second half, 32 points in the second half alone, and then 10 more in overtime after that?
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, it's just watching him shoot is an absolute treat. And, you know, the parts of the country that are not aware of him, I feel bad for them because they're missing out on a show. I know Trey Young in Oklahoma is the show in college basketball right now, and I'm not going to disagree with that. He is a great player. But, you know, for fans who have not seen Marcus Howard play, they are missing out. He is just such a treat to watch. And Marquette fans, enjoy him while you can because you know, he's going to be an NBA player eventually. I don't know if it'll be necessarily after this year, but he'll be a pro sooner or later. And when he is, we are going to miss him at Marquette, but right now I am just enjoying the show he is putting on. I want to see him now top at some point, maybe hit 12 threes in a game, maybe score 60 points, maybe do something crazy like go 10 for 10 from three or something like that. I'm just excited to see what else this guy has left because I still don't think he's peaked as a player at all.
Well, no, and it was what was crazy about the Providence game was like in that first half, and you mentioned it, you know, 32 in the second half, 10 in overtime. In that first half, it kind of looked like it was going to be a continuation of kind of fine, but not the not the great Marcus Howard. And then coming out of halftime, I don't know how many whiteboards, you know, Wojo punched to get Marcus ready to go, but he went on, started the game with an 8-0 run by himself, and just it seemed to fuel everything from then on. And it was basically and the other thing about that Providence game that was remarkable to me was he was getting his offense in the flow. It wasn't, with the exception of a couple of shots late in the game, he took probably a rush three when he could have driven it and whatnot. But you know, he was within the flow of the offense throughout that second half and in overtime. He wasn't forcing anything. He got teammates involved, but it was basically like Providence knew he was coming and they literally had no options to stop him.
Yeah, that's the most remarkable thing to me about Marcus Howard is he can score as many points as he does, but he really doesn't take many bad shots. It's not like he's, you know, jacking up 40 shots a game to get to 50 points.
Right.
You know, or how many shots did he even take in the Providence game? He shot.
He shot 29. 29 shots.
Okay, yeah.
17
yeah,
for 29
shots. So, yeah, it's not like he's fired up 40 or 50 shots to get to 52 points. He takes good shots. He, you know, you look at his shooting percentages on the season, rock solid. 40% from three, 58.6 from two, which is a very high percentage for a guard. Most guards right. don't normally shoot that high from two, you know, or. Yeah, not that high from two. You know, you expect like the 60% range to be more like a big man. But he, like I said, he doesn't rush shots. And we even talked in the last pod, Phil, about maybe what might have contributed to his funk a little bit. And one of it, and one thing we did bring up was foul trouble. Is you know when there have been a couple games there where he had some fouls that were maybe a little questionable, and he just couldn't get in a flow of a game. And, you know, shooters are going to want to get into a rhythm of a game, and once they're feeling it, then it's when they can really kind of take off. And that certainly happened in that Providence game. And even though he was feeling it, not many heat checks. It's not like he pulls up from 30 or 35 feet very often. He
right.
is going to take good shots, you know, whether it's a step back or just shaking a defender, going around a screen, or just – you know, giving the ball up and then getting open on his own, getting the ball back. He makes really good decisions, and it shows statistically in his shooting percentages.
Yeah, well, and the other thing that I think gets lost in what a tremendous that game was on Tuesday against Providence, he only had two turnovers. To score 52 points in that game, he's got to have the ball in his hands an awful lot, and he only had two turnovers. That's kind of a remarkable statistic. You would think he'd have several more turnovers just simply because he's attacking the way he is. So I think I'm kind of at a loss for words as to how to describe how awesome it was, and maybe it's the Marquette homer in me, but I kind of feel like the coverage, especially when he followed it up with 37 against Villanova, who's no slouch of a team, obviously, things are not. I, within the national media, I feel like there should be more Marcus Howard love out there. I feel like it's been kind of undercovered kind of quietly. I know SportsCenter led with it and stuff, but like he had a heck of a week, and you would think there'd be some articles about him, but I haven't really seen much.
Yeah. I guess I'm just not one. I really never expect much national coverage from Marquette, at least not until they're like a regular top 25 team. You know, or like near the top of the Big East consistently. You know, there are 351 teams, you know, and there's, you know, and there are certainly quite a few, you know, 50 or so that are probably ranked ahead of Marquette if you were to pin it all. Right now, Marquette's a top 50 KenPom team, but, you know, you get what I mean. And, you know, we're a small school with a small fan base. I even saw somebody bark at Seth Davis about not enough Marquette coverage, and I'm like, dude, come on. You know, do you really need to bark at national media about it? But, yeah, is he a little undercovered? Maybe. But I'm not really been out of shape about it. I guarantee you if he had 37 points in a win over Villanova, that would have led to a little more coverage. But because, you know, then Marquette would be in the discussion of, you know, could they contend for the Big East? Or should they start getting AP top 25 votes? Things like that. But, yeah, I don't expect I just don't expect a ton of national coverage. And like you said, when he scored 52 points, a lot of people were tweeting about it. A lot of national writers were tweeting about it. He did lead SportsCenter that night, like they did a little cold open off the top with his 52 point night, and then they went into what was the huge NBA game? It was the Cavs Celtics that night.
Yep.
So I mean, so they like at least give him a little love off the top of the show. So yeah, I think. Yeah, we always want more, right? We're Marquette people. We want to see our guys on TV, and we want to see national coverage and stuff like that. But again, there are 351 teams out there, and there just aren't as many that have the huge followings of the Dukes and Kentuckys and Carolinas and Arizonas and Kansas and whatnot. So, yeah, if Marquette were to consistently climb into the upper echelon of the Big East, you may see them get more love. But even then, you know, the Big East is still on FS1, so ESPN is not going to overreach too much to cover too much Big East play because it's not on their network all that often. But, yeah, he is certainly worthy of a little more attention, but I just never really anticipate it, and I don't really get bent out of shape about it. We cover him plenty on scrambled eggs, and I hope that's enough for him.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's satisfied with the coverage we're delivering on his performance.
I hope
that
he doesn't
I'm
even listen to this
in.
Podcast. I hope he has better things to do.
Well, yeah, he's probably in the gym shooting a bunch of threes.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, no, I'm not necessarily complaining. I'm simply saying that just trying to put it into context, you would have thought.
But yeah, the interesting thing is, something that some people did ask after the 52-point night, maybe this is a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to a 52-point night, is that, you know, should we start talking to him about it as an NBA prospect for this year? You know, he's not in any mock drafts that I've seen for this year, and that could, of course, always change. But, you know, if he continues to score at this rate, if he finishes in the top 10 in the NCAA in scoring, would he sneak into a mock draft or two? I don't know how much he would have to do to be considered a first-round pick, just because there are so many guys, whether you think they're better than him or not, that probably have more potential as a pro, just because of their size and whatnot. You know, like, say, obviously he's outscored, for just off the top of my head, a guy like Kevin Knox at Kentucky, who is a freak of an athlete. He's not scoring as much as Marcus Howard is, but because he is 6'7 and has a pretty good-looking jump shot and is pretty versatile, he's much more likely to go in the lottery than a guy like Marcus Howard, who's 5'11. It's just kind of the way it is. You guys look, you know, you draft 19-year-olds on potential than maybe production at the college level. So that's what I guess maybe kind of tough for me to gauge how an NBA team would view Marcus Howard right now as an NBA point guard.
One of the things that's interesting is Anonymous Eagle. I don't remember when it was. One of the writers for Anonymous Eagle wrote an article about, you know, around the subject of Marcus Howard and whether he goes to the NBA at some point. And they actually made a case that Howard should go after this year because, again, I think Jay Billis brought it up, was that, you know, Marcus Howard is 6 months younger than Trae Young. You know, so he's definitely got that what the thing the NBA is looking for, where, you know, it's youth, right? He's not necessarily, I mean, I suppose he could get taller, but he's more than likely not getting taller. So staying in college longer isn't necessarily going to be better or worse for him, right? So if he continues to score at this rate, you would think, I mean, he's definitely going to be a defensive liability at the NBA. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, no shade, but he's kind of a defensive liability at the NCAA level. That's only going to get worse in the NBA. But he's got to steal the line from Taken, he's got a particular set of skills you would think the NBA would find a place for, right?
Yeah, when you can shoot like he can, teams are going to want to see if they can incorporate you in part of their offense because, I mean, the NBA is more perimeter-oriented than it's ever been.
Right.
Mostly thanks to the way the Golden State Warriors play and how successful they have been shooting the ball the way they do. And teams are always looking for three-point shooters. So if Marcus Howard continues to shoot the ball the way he has, yeah, I think teams would I think there would be several teams who would at least want to bring him in for a look. The question is, like you said, can they deal with the defensive liabilities in the NBA, and would he create for others enough at the NBA? I think he doesn't necessarily have to do that much at Marquette because Andrew Rousey is running the point more often than not, and Marquette just looks for Howard to score a lot. But, you know, you're right, and I guess we'll see how it unfolds over the next few months and if he moves up in any mock drafts, but you know, the way the rules are now, I would certainly anticipate Howard at least putting his name in the draft without an agent and getting some feedback, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, because there's no harm in that, because he could always, you know, declare without an agent, get some feedback, do a couple workouts, get a feel if he's going to get drafted at all, and then make a decision about whether or not he wants to come back. So I would anticipate he would at least do that. But, you know, that's still a few months away. But, yeah, I still have a really good feel as if NBA teams are really warming up on him just yet. But if he continues to score at close to 30 points a game, I think teams are going to have to say, well, maybe this guy, despite his size, could play. I mean, Tyler Ulis is playing in the NBA right now, right? I mean, the guard from Kentucky. Now, granted, he was a great creator at Kentucky. I mean, he's a very good passer, but he's also a very good shooter. He's a 5'7", All-American from Kentucky. But so it's not unheard of that guys under 6 feet can succeed in the NBA.
Isaiah Thomas.
You really have to show guys that you have a skill set that makes it worth having you on the roster. And if Howard is going to continue to shoot the ball the way he has, that is certainly something NBA teams like, all right, you're short, but you could shoot the ball better than just about anybody else on our team. So let's, you know, let's take a look at it.
Right. Yeah. He's got skills that an NBA team would want. The only thing that keeps him from being an NBA prospect after this year is literally his height. So, we'll see what comes of it. It's again, if Marquette goes to the tournament and they get they can win a game or two and he gets a chance to highlight his skills on the national stage. I think there's a possibility, and it's really a question of what he wants to do. Because, again, I don't think if he's got an opportunity, even, say, the second round this year, I don't think that opportunity gets better in future years. Like, I don't think he can do anything in his junior or senior year that's going to somehow translate to the NBA teams going, oh, Marcus Howard seems good. I didn't realize that before, right?
Yeah, I could see that. The only thing I might say is, as the roster currently stands, Howard is going to be the point guard next year.
Like, that's
almost
true.
Every minute he's going to be on the floor. So I think teams would be intrigued to see that.
That's true. It's like it would be doing the opposite of what Vander Blue did, right? Like
if Vander Blue had stayed another year at Marquette, he would have had a full year playing point guard. And would that have gotten him drafted? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But it could have if he played the position well. But, yeah, I think that is, again, unless Marquette brings in a point guard, a veteran point guard, I would say, because I don't think any freshman is going to come in and beat out Marcus Howard to play point guard.
Nope.
Unless some kind of stunning grad transfer comes in, or junior college transfer that I've never heard of who can play point guard and keep Marcus Howard at the two, then I would anticipate Marcus Howard playing a lot of point guard, even more than he is now, next year. And that would, I think, be something NBA scouts would take a long look at, say, all right, this is how he plays point guard at the college level, let's extrapolate this out and see what he could do as a point guard at the NBA level, because he's obviously going to be a point guard in the NBA. I mean, I don't think there are any sub-6-foot shooting guards in the NBA, to my knowledge.
Right. Oh, I don't know that there's ever been one.
If it was, it might have been 50 years ago. So.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, you just have to be, because when you're guarding, you know, guys like, you know, pick your favorite shooting guard in the NBA. You know, if you're guarding guys like Klay Thompson in the NBA, you can't be short. So, anyway, so without talking too much NBA, Phil, one topic I want to talk about with Howard before we move on to the games from the past week, something you kind of threw out there on Twitter. You know, we kind of live in the moment sometimes with these great performances and say, that was the best ever, or is that the best ever? Is it one of the best ever? And you kind of jump into the best ever discussion right away when something great happens. But when you set a school record by a comfortable margin and you tie your own school record for threes, the question could be asked, where does Marcus Howard's performance rate among the all-time individual performances in Marquette history? You know, off the top of my head, Phil, the one that I can't get past, and like I can't put Marcus Howard above it, the first one is obviously Dwayne Wade's triple-double in the Elite Eight against Kentucky. Just because, you know, you grade on the curve based on the situation, and he was just absolutely, I mean, that was just the greatest individual performance I've ever seen by any Marquette player, considering the opponent, the circumstance, what was on the line, and just the numbers he put up. But for you, Phil, gut reaction, where Marcus Howard's performance rates in Marquette lore?
Yeah, I think you're right that the circumstances dictate kind of where it ranks. You know, if you're talking about just pure, like, from an athletic skill, or just if you take the situation out of it, like, I don't know. I think given the construction of the team, Howard's is probably one or two, but the import of the moment and the situation matters. So like Dwayne Wade's performance against Kentucky is is either one or two for me. The other one I think of is Novak's 41 with, I think he also had 16 rebounds or something ridiculous like that, against UConn, the first game against the Big East, in the Big East. UConn was ranked number 2, and Novak just went off. And that was UConn team that was stocked full with – they had 4 NBA number 1 – or first-round draft picks on that UConn.
Yeah, they were number
team.
2 in the country at that time. And, yep. You know, that UConn team was, I think, everyone's pick to win the NCAA championship the year. They were, if I remember correctly, they were the one that got victimized by George Mason in the Elite Eight.
I believe that's correct. But they had Rudy Gay and a few other, you know, well-known NBA players that I'm blanking on. I'm not well.
I know. I'm blanking on the rest of that team as well. But it was a tremendous UConn team.
Napier was on that squad, I think. Anyway, this isn't a UConn podcast, otherwise we'd be talking about how awful the AAC was. But anyway, Novak and Wade, those two performances, I think, get ahead of Marcus simply because of the situation, right? Those were, there's no doubting a Providence win, and we'll get to it, was important. But in the context of the greater scheme of things, those two games, especially Wade's game, were just, quite frankly, much more important games. I might put Novak's performance in terms of, like, general performance ahead of Wade's, but Dwayne's triple-double against the number one team in the country in the Elite Eight, like, I you can't remove that situation. It was just a performance for the ages, given the time and the place.
Yeah, by the way, while we were talking, I brought it up. That 2006 Connecticut team, thank you, KenPom, was finished number 4 in KenPom of the year. They only had 3 losses entering the tournament. One of them was, of course, at Marquette. They also lost to Villanova, and they lost to Syracuse in the Big East Conference Tournament. Guys on that team, Rudy Gay, Marcus Williams, Rashad Anderson, Hilton Armstrong was an NBA player, Josh Boone, I think, maybe had a cup of coffee in the NBA. Trying to think, and then the younger guys, yeah, Denham Brown, Marcus Johnson. So, yeah, I guess the guys, the big guys on that team were Rudy Gay, Marcus Williams, and Rashad Anderson, and maybe to a lesser extent, Hilton Armstrong and Josh Boone. So those were the guys you were trying to think of.
But, yeah.
I also brought up the box score from Dwayne Wade's triple-double for you young'uns out there. In the Elite Eight in 2003, Dwayne Wade went for 29 points on 11 of 16 shooting, including 2 for 2 from 3, which was definitely not his forte in college, shooting threes. But
it took a while for him to get there in the NBA.
Yeah, and 11 rebounds and 11 assists, 4 offensive rebounds, 7 defensive rebounds, had a steal and 4 blocks.
Yeah, that was good.
Just he posterized Marquise Estill, and I just totally lost my mind. And
yeah, like, wow, well, and not to mention that Travis Diener was the point guard on that team, right? Like Wade wasn't playing the one. Wade was playing off the ball. To get 11 assists is insane.
Yeah, Diener had 7 assists in that game. So yeah, basically he just kept passing to Wade, which was probably a good idea that day. But. Yeah, and I will say the caveat when we're breaking down, it's hard to declare it the greatest Marquette individual performance because I confess I am a little ignorant when it comes to individual performances from the 1970s. All those teams under Al McGuire, I'm sure there were some absolutely incredible ones. I mean, I'm sure Doc Rivers had a few good ones in the 80s, but as far as like one that would jump out to me, I definitely would need a media guide in front of me, and I don't have one. So I'm sure there were, whether it was Bo Ellis or Maurice Lucas or Butch Lee or
George Thompson,
whoever. George Thompson. I'm sure all those guys had some epic performances in their day, but they were all before my time.
I don't know that you can really compare eras, right? I mean, some of the games we're talking about, they didn't even have the 3-point line.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, so that you can't. That's a trope in sports I don't really care for when you try and compare like 50 years of sports against each other. It just doesn't really work that way, I don't think.
Yeah, but as far as the modern era of Marquette basketball, like since the 3-point line came into an existence and, you know, the modern rules, Marcus Howard is got to be a top five performance in Marquette history, maybe top three. But yeah, I would agree with you, Phil. The Wade's triple-double and Novak's 41 against an unbelievable UConn team right up there. But, you know, I would listen to arguments if you want to put Howard's 52 points ahead of Novak's, just because it was a road environment, a game Marquette really kind of needs. I mean, I think it's a little early in the season to call it a must-win game, but it was a game, if you want to get to that 10-win plateau, you really needed to beat that Providence team that was playing without Bullock. And,
right.
And you had him on the ropes, and you really wanted to finish that game. So
could
I would
you
listen
imagine
to arguments
if they
for
had lost
Marcus Howard
game?
As a number two right behind Wade.
Yeah, I buy it. I still put Novak. I mean, but I totally get the other side of it. But could you imagine if Marquette had lost that game against Providence after a 52-point performance?
Absolutely, like, crushing. I would be on this podcast talking about how there is absolutely no hope of them getting the 10 wins. That would be my talking point today if they did not get that win at Providence, because you can't waste a historic performance like that and lose when Marcus Howard goes off for 52 points. They had to win that game, and they did. So to their credit, they got that win. So that was certainly very important. And just maybe touching on the Providence game as a whole, it's hard to touch on it without talking about Marcus Howard.
Right.
But like I said, Phil, when we learned that Bullock was not going to be playing for Providence, there just kind of was a feeling like, all right, well, we got to get one of those – Got to get a road win against one of these middle teams in the conference. And so all of a sudden the window was open to kind of get it done. And so I thought overall the team played pretty well. Obviously buoyed by Howard and just going absolutely insane from behind the three-point arc. But, I mean, they got a quietly had a nice performance from Sam Hauser too, including that back-breaking three at the end that put the game on ice.
Well, it was an interesting game. I was supremely confident going into the game, you know, with Cartwright theoretically struggling with a sore ankle and Bullock
right.
not being able to play. I thought, all right, here we go. We're going to win. And if you look at the win probability, I mean, again, Marcus Howard would have finished with like, you know, 38 or 39 points if they had lost. But with like a minute 17 to go, Marquette had like a 3% chance of winning per KenPom. You know, so like we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the team, they probably didn't play very well throughout the game generally. Like their defense, again, it would have been the evergreen podcast that the defense wasn't good enough. But we shouldn't lose sight of that was a gutty comeback to even force overtime. It took a Marcus
yep.
Howard drive and one, a Marcus three, and playing some legitimate defense on Carrington that actually forced a turnover that gave Rousey a look at the end of regulation even to win it. So, it was a tough game. Again, cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. Road wins in the Big East are very hard to come by, so I don't care if it was against an undermanned Providence squad. We should have beat more handily than we did. We won. And we didn't waste the historic effort by Marcus. That's what's
you don't
important.
Apologize for it. By the
right.
way, what did you think? I know Providence fans were pissed about it. What did you think about the no call on Rousey when he kind of lost his dribble there on the last play when Hauser hit the three?
Well, I'll shave off some of the language I used, but I don't know if it was a double dribble. I've watched it a couple of times. I don't think it was, but quite frankly, I don't care. Because we have gotten a number of calls go against us over the years generally and this year specifically. So I'm fine if that was a missed call. That game in general was, I'll say, poorly officiated. Not necessarily because I think there were calls that went against Marquette like more than they went against Providence. I just thought it was craptacular basketball as a result of the way the game was officiated.
Yeah, for the record, I actually did not think it was a double dribble, especially after looking at the replay. It definitely looked like it was because,
right.
like I said, he lost his dribble. Like, who was it that was guarding? That was guarding Howard at the end. It wasn't Diallo. It was maybe it was Diallo. Like he kind of gave Howard like a, or Rousey like a little bump as he went around him, not enough to call a foul, but you know Rousey kind of lost his balance a little bit, and so like when he was motioning his hand down to dribble again, the ball wasn't there. And so it looked like he missed the ball with one attempt to dribble, but the ball was still bouncing.
Right.
So then he like put his other hand on the ball and like, you know, slapped at it a little bit to bounce it again. And like it was maybe a millimeter off the ground, but it was still bouncing. So it's, that's not a double dribble just because you take the hand off the ball. Like, I mean, you see guys dribble up the court all the time, you know, like when there's nobody guarding them,
yep.
You know, like take both hands off the ball and like put both hands in the air and call a play and then start dribbling again. That's not a double dribble as long as the ball is still bouncing. So it looked like a double dribble. It looked like some kind of violation, but it wasn't. I think, like I said, officiating can be certainly questionable in the Big East oftentimes, but I think the Zebras got that one right.
Yeah, so, well, and it was like you said, it was the weird motion because he kind of hit down at an angle on the ball. You know, like you could see where someone might think in the moment, like he kind of scooped under it to pick it up. But
yeah.
he struck down on the ball, which caused the ball to
exactly. It was just a weird looking motion. It's not something you're used to seeing. It's
right,
dribbling and like missing the ball, and then you know just reaching out with the other hand and just kind of slapping at it to get it dribbling again. But the ball never stopped dribbling, and he never picked it up. Like I said, he never scooped it. If he had like put his right hand under the ball and bounced it again, then yeah, that would be a carry, and that would have been a travel, or you know a double dribble. So good no call. Marquette got away and. Marquette got away with it, thankfully, and Hauser just hit a monster three to give them the win. So,
what do you think? So do you think Rousey knew what he was doing? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, because he kind of had his head up. Do you think he like was knew like where the ball was at and was trying to do that or like?
I think he was aware. I think he was aware that Rousey is a confident guy, and like I think he knew. Like, I can't pick this ball up. I just got to smack, you know, just kind of like slap at it to make sure it keeps dribbling. So I don't think, I think Rousey kind of knew exactly what he was doing. He was, like I said, he was probably caught off guard a little bit when, I think it was Diallo, just like I said, he kind of bumped him going around him because you remember Howard kind of went around Rousey
yep.
to maybe try to get open again and get the ball and take that shot. And so he kind of like, he may have been caught off guard when Diallo gave him like a little bump there, but I think he was supremely confident that he was still dribbling the ball and did not carry it.
Yeah, I think that's so. But it was a heck of a play.
Yeah, I mean, it was beautifully executed the whole last play because there was no, you know, Providence was doing everything they could to make sure Howard didn't take that last shot and put Marquette up 4 or 5 at the end. So, but then. That just allowed Hauser to get open, and Hauser hit a big shot, so that was huge. And the reason it was huge, Phil, is you know we've talked about before, there's a path to 9 or 10 wins, and I've tweeted about this you know before the first Big East game of the year against Xavier, and we've talked about it here on the show as well. I think that path is sweep the bottom two. That's DePaul and Georgetown. So in that regard, they're 1-for-1. Get, you know, you got to hold serve at home against what I consider the middle four of the conference, Providence, Butler, St. John's, and Creighton. Not necessarily in that order. Creighton's certainly at the top of the heap there. So you got to beat those teams at home. And then you got to, and the Marquette has not had a chance at any of those, so they're 0-for-0 in that regard at the moment. And then you have to steal a road win from those four. You can check that off. They got that done. And then you got to steal one win in 6 attempts against the top three. Villanova, Seton Hall,
0-for-2 there.
Xavier. So yeah. They are 0-for-2 in that regard. But they got a chance to get that first win this week, Phil, against Seton Hall. A golden opportunity against Seton Hall at home. So as far as being on track to get in that 9-10 win, 10-win range, that win at Providence kind of made that possible. So that's why that was such a huge win. And again, yeah, you're not going to apologize because you faced a Providence team that was missing Bullock. So, you know, it sucks for you guys, but, you know, injuries are part of the game. You get the win, you don't apologize, you move on. So you take that win and be happy with it. You're 2-2. So, yeah, then you're 2-1, then you go to Villanova. Let's talk about the Villanova game a little bit, Phil. And in the first half, it looked like it was going to be a bloodbath. Villanova was just getting so many easy baskets against Marquette's defense. Just lots of layups and dunks, and they were hitting outside shots. It just looked like it was really going to get out of hand. But Marquette made a bit of a run there in the second half, and maybe with a lineup we didn't really expect there towards the end that made the game interesting. They got, what, about as close as five there towards the end. But that lineup of Howard, Kane, Elliott, Annam, and Hauser, pretty interesting lineup that I thought played pretty well and made the game at least watchable towards the end of the second half there.
Well, yeah, and I think what was interesting is, I mean, that's a lineup in, you know, the tendency is to say, well, why don't we do that all the time? But I don't know, like, against Seton Hall, you're never gonna, you know, Angel Delgado is gonna eat us alive as it is. If you go to that small lineup, it's gonna be real bad news. But you know, given the way Villanova is constructed, they don't really have a true big man, so it kind of works. So you kind of wonder, you know, why didn't we go that direction sooner, right? I mean, some of it's because you've got to give minutes to Rousey, even though Rousey was to say he struggled against Villanova is probably an understatement. And so when he went out, I think Wojo just kind of went, well, listen, we're not going to get back into this with pure offense. So let's put some length on this. Somebody, you know, Elliott did a good job of slowing Brunson down. I don't think he stopped him, but he certainly slowed him down some. And you got Kane's athleticism in there. And I think the lineup where Nova's kind of playing that positionless basketball, because, you know, Marquette struggled a little bit. We had Helt guarding Brunson a couple of times in the first half because Marquette was switching on everything. I think it made it interesting. It at least put athletes on our best athletes on the floor, and maybe it's something we look to do in the future where we're able to. I don't know. What did you think of the game overall?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised that they were as close as they were when the game was over. Like I said, I think they got as close as maybe five, certainly as close as six there late in the second half. Like, I never thought, oh, wow, they could win this, because I think they were kind of at that point where, you know, they got it to six, and then Nova would come down and get two more, and they got it to five, and then all of a sudden it's back up to eight. So, but yeah, I will say this, you know, they've lost relatively close games to Xavier and Villanova with one of their guards being off in each game. Because, right, Howard didn't have his best game against Xavier, and Rousey didn't have his best game against Villanova. I would love to see what would maybe happen in the rematches if both of those guys are on.
Have we seen a game yet where Hauser, Howard, and Rousey are all on?
If we have, it was against, like, a team we were supposed to kill.
Like, yeah, or maybe Wisconsin. I don't, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Well, that's a team we're supposed to kill.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Yeah, the thing is, it's tough for all three of them to be on because there are only so many points to go around.
Right.
You know, I think it's almost impossible for all three of those guys to, like, go off for, like, 25 points, but that would sure be something to see if that were to happen. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe you can get a perfect storm against one of those teams here as we get into the middle stages of Big East play here. I would love for it to happen on Tuesday against Seton Hall, Phil.
That would be nice.
That would certainly be outstanding. You know, I mentioned a minute ago, when you're talking about maybe stealing one win out of six tries against the top three in the Big East, this might be your best chance to do it, getting Seton Hall at home. According to KenPom, Marquette is only a one-point dog in this game. So it's essentially a 50-50 game against Seton Hall. But as you mentioned, Angel Delgado, I was so bummed to see he was coming back to Seton Hall because I was kind of sick of playing him. Without looking up stats, I would guess he averages roughly 30-20 against Marquette, something like that.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, it's probably something like 12-10. I think he has had a double-double in almost every game, maybe except one that he's played against Marquette, something like that. He always seems like he goes for 15-10 against Marquette. And so maybe throwing three different bigs at him, with maybe even four if you include Hauser in that, maybe you can limit what he does. But, you know, if you do that, Seton Hall's got two or three other guys that can really tear it up as well. So how do you view this matchup with, by the way, the number one team in the Big East as we sit here on Sunday night, Phil? They are the only unbeaten team.
Well, and thankfully I was watching a little bit of that Butler-Seton Hall game, and I was just thinking when Butler was up mid to late in that game, thinking, man, please don't beat Seton Hall. They're going to come up fired up even more to Milwaukee. So that kind of worked out a little bit, though past performance is no future indicator, I guess. But I think it's really going to take Marquette shooting from three, which seems totally obvious, but I think Marquette's got to work outside in on the offensive side. And I really am curious to see who they put on Delgado, right? Do they go, you know, kind of a pure center? I don't think Helt's going to be able to really handle Delgado. Do you run, you know, somebody quicker, more athletic, like a Hauser at him? Do you say, all right, let's go with maybe more of a Froehling at the five and try and tire Delgado out on the defensive end. But I think you got to, whatever you got to do, you got to limit Delgado somehow.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't know about Froehling defensively just yet, and I think Delgado would be way too much for him. If we see Froehling against Delgado at all, it might be because he's maybe doubling, maybe helping out with Theo John out there or something like that, or maybe you let Hauser do the best he can against Delgado. But you know, like I said, then you've got Desi Rodriguez to worry about, then you got Kadeem Carrington to worry about. They just have so many talented guys, and they're all seniors, and that's another thing that concerns me about Seton Hall. Is this is such an experienced team. I think that's why they're kind of a trendy Final Four pick, you know, a team that maybe not be all that highly ranked right now as far as the top 25 goes, but just because they are experienced and they are pretty good inside and out, that this is a team that could make a run in March. And who knows, while I would still, if I had to pick a team, I would still pick Villanova to win the Big East. I certainly wouldn't rule out Seton Hall winning the Big East. They have the talent to do it. But yeah, I think my question is, like, you know, if Delgado gets 10-10 again, you could still probably find a way to win this game. I'm just concerned about him going off and getting closer to, you know, 20-10 or something like that. Because I don't know which of Marquette's bigs could necessarily slow him down.
Yeah,
like I said, it's easy to say just double him, but then you know you're going to get eaten up by Rodriguez or Carrington or maybe Miles Powell.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing. I do think they're going to pack the lane a little bit more than they usually would. You know, we've talked about in the past that they're much more of a perimeter Marquette is a perimeter oriented defense. They work from the outside in instead of the inside out. I do expect them to pack in a little bit more, maybe even go a little 2-3 or some more 1-3-1 if they get some practice time at it. Seems like they still haven't figured out all the pieces on the 1-3-1. You know, one thing, I think Theo John will get a lot of minutes because he's probably the best physical matchup with Delgado. One thing that the big should not hesitate is to foul. Now it feels like every single team we play against has had their best free throwing shooting night against us. So we're going to really have to practice free throw defense, this week, but Seton Hall is really bad at free throws. So at some point that's got to pay off, right? We got to maybe foul and make them hit at the free throw line.
Yeah, you know, your gut feeling that teams shoot well against Marquette at the free throw line is backed up statistically, Phil. They rank 346th in the country in opponents' free throw percentage.
That's bad. That's real bad.
And again, you joke, you know, the term is free throw percentage defense. Well, you can't exactly defend a free throw. That's why I love to say, student section's got to bring it, man. Whatever you guys got to – you guys are the only defense against a free throw, so – whatever kind of creativity you can bring to the student section when Seton Hall's shooting your way, man, do what you guys got to do. I don't know. I don't have any good suggestions off the top of my head. But what did Arizona State have? I don't know if they still do it. What was that that curtain of mystery or whatever they called it?
Yeah,
you know we're talking about.
Yeah, and then there was wasn't there a Duke guy that came out of somewhere with a Speedo against North Carolina?
Yes,
some
yeah, that was.
Game?
Nothing I would recommend in public, but if you know one of you crazy 18, 19 year olds are decided you want to do that and embarrass yourselves, go for it. Good luck to you. But yeah, but hope again, hopefully they don't need to do that, Phil, because, as you said, Seton Hall is actually one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the country. Maybe not one of the worst, but they're certainly not good. They are ranked 302nd in the country. So they are certainly in the bottom, you know, sixth of the country. Something like that. It's 66%. So, yeah, don't hesitate to foul Delgado. I mean, he's a 60% shooter. Rodriguez shoots 71%, so maybe I wouldn't recommend fouling him, but it wouldn't be the worst. Carrington, don't foul him. He's at 81. Powell, don't foul him. He's at 83. But you look after that, there's a lot of 54s,
no one over
42s. Yeah, so a lot of other guys, like basically all the role players shoot about 54% or worse.
Yeah.
So you can foul those guys. Oh, you know, looking at the rosters, one guy I forgot was on the team. Remember Philip Flory?
Yeah. I forgot he was on the roster.
A one-time Marquette commit who's actually now a walk-on at Seton Hall. I wouldn't expect to see him in this game, but recruiting honks would recognize that name. Buzz Williams offered him when he was an eighth grader. And then after the coaching change, that relationship dissolved entirely, and then there was, I don't think there was ever any other offer. But yeah, just to, for those who follow Marquette recruiting a lot, you would remember the name Philip Flory. He committed to Marquette as a freshman, eighth grader freshman.
I think it was eighth grade. I think that was what was so kind of ridiculous about it.
Yeah, like it was after his eighth grade year. Like he was going into his freshman season, and Buzz offered him, and he committed right away. And then, but yeah, so if you see him on the bench, former Marquette commit, but getting off track. But yes, back to the main point, Phil. I would agree. Don't hesitate to foul, especially if Delgado's really tearing it up, and maybe you need to slow down the momentum a little bit. Hacking Delgado, probably not the worst strategy if the game's getting out of hand.
Now, having said that, not to bring back bad memories of last season, if you are going to foul him and he is going to miss, make sure you get the rebound.
Yes,
that's
was
important.
A nightmare last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, at Seton Hall, that was a blown
game.
Certainly easier said
than done. Yeah. Like at Seton Hall, they rank number 7 in the country in offensive rebound percentage. So they're going to grab a lot of them. So there's going to be a lot on guys like Helt and John and Hauser and Froehling. I mean, they have got to rebound. They have got to know where Delgado is on every shot, and they have got to box him out, and they cannot let them get easy putbacks because Seton Hall is just great on the glass. I mean, some of the other numbers as I'm scanning through KenPom, looking at some of Seton Hall stats. Defensively, opponents are rebounding at 29% offensive rebounds, so that's not necessarily a great number. That's at 29, that ranks 188th in the country. In contrast, Marquette's just a little worse than that, ranking 212th in the country. Marquette's offensive rebound percentage, not particularly great, not terrible, but not great by any stretch. They're at 29%. That ranks 171st in the country. So matchup-wise, Seton Hall has a huge advantage on the glass in this game.
So I guess we should just not miss.
I'm sorry?
I said then we should just not miss.
That would be ideal, yes. If Marquette could improve on its 14th ranked effective field goal percentage, that would be fine. They certainly have an advantage there shooting the ball. Now, not so much as far as defending against other teams making it, but you know the thing about Seton Hall, the reason why they are a trendy pick to maybe go deep in the tournament, they are top 20 in offense and top 50 in defense. They rank 17th in offensive efficiency, 46th in defensive efficiency. Marquette, just a tick better offensive efficiency. They rank 14th to Seton Hall 17th, but as you would guess, a huge disparity defensively with Seton Hall ranking 46th and Marquette ranking 165th. And certainly the last two games, you know, giving up 90 points and then 100 points, led a lot of easy buckets to Villanova, certainly didn't help Marquette's defensive metrics. But, you know, generally speaking, Marquette's advantage, as always, is going to be shooting the ball. Seton Hall defends it fairly well as far as three-point percentage. They're in the top 100 in the country. They rank 93rd against the three-point shot. But, of course, Marquette, one of the best in the country shooting the three. They rank in the top 20. And then Seton Hall shooting the ball, pretty good. They rank 64th in three-point percentage. They rank in the top 100 in two-point percentage. They're a top 65 in effective field goal percentage. So, I mean, they're a solid offensive team, and complemented by that very, very high offensive rebound percentage number. So it's going to take a strong effort, but again, according to KenPom, Marquette's only a one-point dog in this game, so you got to hopefully lean on that home court advantage. Maybe you get a few whistles to go your way, which would be nice. And, you know, if Rousey and Howard can both play maybe up to the level we would hope. I don't expect 52 points from Marcus Howard by any stretch, but, you know, if they can shoot their season averages or maybe a little better, stay out of foul trouble, which obviously tends to limit both of them, because when, you know, your shooters can't be on the floor and be in a rhythm, that's going to work against you for Marquette. But, you know, if you can get a, you know, you talked about, Phil, can we get a good all-around performance where both Howard, Rousey, and Hauser are all in a zone? Yeah, that would be a great night to do it on Tuesday. And if that can happen, yeah, they could absolutely beat Seton Hall. While I consider Seton Hall to be one of the elite three in the conference, I don't look at them as and say, well, this is a team Marquette just can't beat.
Well, and I think this is a team that Marquette is built to be competitive with. Like you said, they're, Seton Hall's got some definitive strengths over Marquette, but, you know, Marquette can definitely trade three for twos. Seton Hall, you know, they have a few shooters, but they're not predominant. They don't shoot a lot of threes, and they don't have a lot of great shooters. So it's definitely one of those. If Marquette can get hot, you know, and go, you know, shoot 50-55% from three, which is not unheard of as a team, that puts them in a strong position to be able to win. So I don't think I guarantee a win, but I would feel cautiously optimistic going into this game. You know, so we'll see. It's going to be the second in a long road trip for Seton Hall. They played in Indianapolis on Saturday, and then they got to come out to Milwaukee on Tuesday. So I don't know if they went back or stayed out in the Midwest or not. But, you know, it's going to be their first road trip for them. So it might be a good night to catch them.
Maybe so. Yeah, you're right. I was looking at Seton Hall's record. Their only road game of the season was at Rutgers, so I mean that's not necessarily a road game per se, as it is, you know, just hopping on the train, I guess how far is Piscataway from?
Not
Newark?
Far.
Not really sure.
No, it's an hour at most if you account
for
traffic.
A bus ride, I guess.
Yeah.
And then they've had a couple neutral court games, but yeah. I agree. I think it's a great opportunity for Marquette to get a win against one of those top three teams, and we'll see what happens after that. I know let's take a quick look at Butler before we get out of here, Phil, because that's the game coming up on Friday. And Butler's a team that's maybe a little hard for me to figure out. They were a team that I thought Marquette may be able to finish ahead of in the Big East. I still think that's possible, but then they go out and blast Villanova at the beginning of Big East play, and now I'm not sure. And their last two games are both losses, but against, again, two of the best teams in the conference. They lost on the road at Xavier, and then they lost at home in a tight one to Seton Hall. So, you know, Butler in that game against Villanova, they were just on fire from three. They must have I think they shot like 68% from three to stun Villanova in that second game of conference play. But I think Butler is a team that Marquette might actually match up pretty well with, and I think you could go on the road and beat a team like Butler, because I think they've played a little above their head, and I still think they're a nice team, and I think they could get into the tournament. But I think this is a team that maybe kind of right there even with Marquette. They're a little higher in KenPom. They're 38. Marquette's 46th. But I think, you know, going on the road, and granted, Hinkle is just such an amazing place, but I think that's a game you could steal as well.
Yeah, I think it is. I think, again, from a team construction and strategy, I think Marquette is favorable against Butler. Butler doesn't defend the three particularly well or limit the three, I suppose. They're not particularly
tall. Yeah, they're 290 in the country, three-point percentage defense.
Yeah, you know, so I think with the way Marquette's constructed, I think they can take advantage of Butler. I don't think it's going to be easy by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's going to be I think it's going to be one that Marquette has a good opportunity in. So I don't think between the Butler and the Seton Hall games, I don't think Marquette wins both of them. I mean, it would be amazing if they win both of them. But I think the odds are pretty darn good that Marquette wins at least one of these two games.
That's kind of where my mindset is going into this week as well. Is I think Marquette would do well to go 1-1 again this week. And then, you know, then if you can do that, then that goal of 10 wins really kind of becomes reachable as you go into the, you know, then you got DePaul after that. That's a, you know, a game you absolutely have to win at home. And then you've got that brutal stretch of Xavier and Villanova back to back. But then after that, the toughest part of the Big East schedule is behind you, because then at that point you would have both Xavier games behind you, both Villanova games behind you. And then, now granted, you have a lot of road games towards the end. We talked about that before the season began, is like once you get into February, there's a lot of road games. But you kind of have a little bit of a stretch there where you have a handful of home games. Like you get Nova at home, which would be tough, of course. But then you get Butler and Providence at home. Get both games you should win if you want to talk about being a tournament team. There's an opportunity to maybe build a little momentum before February when Marquette is on the road a lot. They are, what, 1, 2, 3...
Five out of seven
to wrap the season. So they go 5 out of 6 on the road in February, and then they have one home game in March. So February will be very tough for Marquette as far as having to be road warriors. But before you get to that, you get this stretch here, and again, like last week, I think Marquette would do very well to come away 1-1. I'm not sure which one they get. I hope they have a nice crowd there on Tuesday night against Seton Hall. And again, hey, student section, bring your best. Try to distract those free throw shooters, because our free throw percentage defense is just porous.
Yeah.
I just don't know where else to improve, but other than distracting free throw shooters. But
well, one thing to note: the students aren't back yet. This is the last game before the students are back.
Well,
so they don't have anything else going on. Might as well
show
up.
You students who are Milwaukee residents, you know, get there if you can, and create some kind of home court advantage against Seton Hall. But yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I'm going to say, if I'm going to make predictions for the week, I'll say win Seton Hall, lose Butler. Because that's kind of what Ken Pom says lose both, but they say very close on Seton Hall and a 5-point spread against Butler. So I'll say Marquette defeats Seton Hall on Tuesday and then goes to Hinkle and loses on Friday. But it is not out of the stretch. Is not a total stretch. I think they could win both games. And I think if they can get good shooting performances from both Howard and Rousey, both of those things become attainable.
Yeah, I think I'd probably reverse them. I do think they go 1-1. I think probably lose Seton Hall, win Butler. But going 1-1, it almost doesn't matter which one you win and which one you lose.
Yeah, because they'd both be nice boosts to your RPI. You know, anytime, and you know, they're going to take KenPom metrics into account this year when they're selecting tournament teams. So anytime you can beat a top 40 KenPom team is a good thing. And so both, as we're recording this Sunday night, both of these teams are top 40 KenPom teams. So those are always good to have. But yeah, great opportunities. And I agree, no matter what kind of 1-1 it is, either way, I think you would, you know, be heading into Monday against DePaul pretty optimistic that you're in decent shape as you hit kind of, get ready for the backstretch of Big East play. So, yeah, I'll say 1-1. So I guess we're on opposite sides there. Seton Hall also goes Seton Hall win, Butler loss, and you're going to go Seton Hall loss, Butler win.
Yep, correct. But 1-1 is good enough for us.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, I'm not going to set my expectations too high yet. But, hey, my expectations will shift dramatically if they go 2-0 this week. I'll start talking about finishing top three in the Big East if that happens. But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, let's pump the brakes a little bit. We're going to need a couple of Marcus Howard 40-point
Yeah, I would like to see maybe one game when, you know, Delgado does not get a double-double against Marquette. How about that?
I'd like to see him not get a double-double, period. I think he gets one every game.
I will say, I hate playing against that guy, but I respect the hell out of Delgado. That he is a really good player.
And, yeah.
He has had a heck of a career at Seton Hall, and I hope for Seton Hall's sake that maybe they do have a deep run of the tournament, but I just hope they have a terrible day on Tuesday.
That would be great. That would be fantastic.
All right, so I guess it's just about time to wrap it up and get out of here. So we always thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. We welcome feedback, comments on the podcast. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. Cracked Sidewalks is the team handle. You can also leave your comments on crackedsidewalks.com. Rate us and review us on iTunes. We have a Facebook page for Scrambled Eggs as well. You can like us and leave comments on there as well. Phil, final thoughts before we get out of here?
Let's really work on that free throw defense on Monday and Tuesday before the game.
Work on that free throw defense, and, you know, the other defense would be great too.
Any kind of defense.
Seashells and balloons, everybody.